are multiplied. That's why we ask people to have your amendments in prior to the dates that we stated. All right, Hector, regarding restorative justice services, please.
Are you inviting me to the podium right now?
You call the meeting to order. Let's go. We got an hour.
Call roll?
We don't call the roll.
Let him finish his meatball.
Rich, do you want me to jump up for 30 seconds?
No, I got it. Don't worry about that. It's just more about the whole. There's different things to be observed that the chairman seems to have forgotten.
Hector.
Call on the roll.
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. I couldn't pack it for you right in your.
Rich, I got it. I mean, just.
All right, let's go.
All right. Your microphone?
Oh,
here, start with this.
Level reach. All right, we'll just start with this. Can you guys all hear me?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. So you will see in your packet, my amendment is for restorative justice services, and it's specifically with regards to adult services, but also the idea being that if we are to have a true restorative justice system, it has to address all the aspects of our community. I discussed this with the county executive. It sounds like this amendment will actually sort of mesh nicely with what's been proposed by the Restorative Justice Center, which is a bit more of the government program sort of centric in certain ways, whereas this would be way more community centric. And I've spoken to a couple different groups. The estimate that was given to me to be able to run a program for Ulster County would probably be about something like $9,000 a month times 12 would be $108,000. So I put in a ballpark of $100,000 in for this particular item. That said, I also, do you have the microphone yet? Okay, cool. Sorry about that. I'm assuming you all can hear me now, right? At this time, I actually, Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to have Gabrielle from the Restorative Justice Center of Newburgh just give a brief description of what that program is like in the city of Newburgh, and then we'll take any other further questions.
Gabrielle Burton Hill. Thank you, Mr.
Come up here.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, please.
Sorry.
No, well, that's all right.
Now, and once again, in my back. Now, in the elevator, my back was towards, and now I'm doing it again. Gabrielle Burton Hill from Newburgh, New York. I represent the Restorative Center. I am the Newburgh Program Director, and we do have offices in the Bronx. So I'm going to be very, very brief. I run community building circles in which it's open to anyone in the city of Newburgh or surrounding areas to come together, and we talk about issues that concern us all. So we have a series of, you know, circles about our water being toxic, but also about how can we come together in a new way to understand each other, to really build neighborhoods one street at a time. And in building our collective wisdoms and sharing each other's stories and getting to know one another, we found that we are not all that much different, that we all have the same hopes, desires, and dreams for ourselves and for our kids and grandkids, that we share our lives. But because of our busyness and different things, we don't come together and talk. So with these circles, we discuss things like gentrification, police and community relations, and we try to find ways to understand each other with an open mind so that we can hear each other, right? And then set out a course of action in which we can make our community better. A stronger and more connected community is going to be a safer community. Our children are going to come and get to know each other in these circles when we do teen circles. And then we also have veteran circles and so on. So our thing is strangers no more. And the more we come together and listen and learn to each other and learn from each other, the stronger and safer our community will be.
I'm going to just stay for half a second. So, you know, I've also, I brought this up to the sheriff-elect. I know that he is interested as well to be able to kind of begin to work towards, you know, real community justice and ensuring that there are ways to go and divert folks out of the system that we're doing that. So I guess at this time, if there are any questions, Mr. Chair, I don't know if...
Yeah, first of all, Mike, I have a question, two questions. Number one...
Is that working, by the way, or no?
Yeah, it's working.
Okay, cool.
So we'd be hiring a company such as hers or some company to be implementing this on $8,000 a month, $7,000 a month, whatever your price is?
I mean, the number, and again, it's nothing's been presupposed, just so you know. I mean, I just needed to come up with a basically generic enough number to be able to actually pull off of so we can actually get a budget amendment together. Even with the Restorative Justice Center at the moment, the RFP that went out, I don't think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no dollar amount exactly set aside within that budget for that. I believe the RFP that went out actually said that the program would be funded by the state and eventually county dollars would be used, right? So at a certain point, you have to be able to kind of come up with a number, and at some point, we'll have that for the other piece of the Restorative Justice Center.
Your county executive budget, don't you have a number in there for the program?
Yes, we do. In fact, I know that as you all have done your deep dive into the budget, we haven't had one opportunity to talk specifically about restorative justice programming or raise the age or anything. So I'm not prepared to have that conversation, on the spot here. But yeah, there's a multi-million-dollar plan built into the budget to implement the new state law.
And I will say that the RFP has not been awarded, so the programs have not been fully set yet. That RFP was focused on youth involved, but also at-risk youth. It was not focused on the adult population, and really, to date, the mission of the center has been looked at as kind of a at-risk youth and youth involved. But again, we're open to listening to ideas from the legislature.
Joe?
And restorative justice isn't unique just to youth, right? So this would be an approach that definitely deals with more of the other side of it. How long have you been doing it in Newburgh? This what we're talking about kind of implementing?
This is almost 4 years. And we've done circles from child support issues up to police relations and how our veterans are being viewed and how they're being treated and parole reentry into the community. So there's no limit to restorative justice. It's how can we not just come together, but how can the community be made whole when there is some supposed harm that to be done, but not just to, and we don't use victim and defendant, but to each party. So the individual who may have grown up without a father, who looked towards gangs as his family members, and then there's some kind of act that takes place, we trace back, like, what's going on with grandma, what's going on in the household, so that not only we look at it for today, but restorative justice should be thought of as generational, like moving forward to make things better so that we can prevent some of the things that are going on today.
4 years is a short time. Do you have any data? Has there been any studies, either in Newburgh or other places that have implemented similar, that show reoccurrences compared to somebody that hasn't, a group that hasn't gone through a program like this, and a group that has, to show quantifiable benefits?
Mr. Maloney, I'm quite sure that there is. I didn't have anything prepared for you, but I can share this story about students in a Bronx high school were having issues with school suspensions and fighting, and the dean did reach out to us, and the team started their own teen circles in the schools, and they have measured a 60% drop in physical altercations and in school and out of school suspensions. So the work is being done. Yes.
All right. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just add also that this county has invested considerable dollars in restorative justice at the youth level, similar to that program for many years. We currently fund the 180 program, which is operated through Family Woodstock, that provides the JCAP panels and other restorative justice techniques. And again, the expansion of all those similar services will be incorporated into our new program as it relates to the Restorative Justice and Community Empowerment Center.
So I think we have to find out exactly what your programs are, county executive programs are, and then see how they can be intertwined with any other program such as this one or any other one. Tracy?
As a starting point, can I ask for, I don't know if there are other ways and means, but like to see if a copy of the RFP that went out before?
It's in here.
It's attached to the amendment.
It's in here.
That's the one that went out.
Yes, globally, that's the RFP as well. Yeah.
Okay, and are we planning, when you talk about the fact that there hasn't been the opportunity to have a discussion about it, are you planning on a presentation to the legislature on the on the restorative justice center and the program.
Amber, where's the two pager that goes along with this?
Certainly that would be something that we would expect to request from the legislature.
That goes with this.
Pay what your budget process is.
Raising
the age and demand restorative programming is a major increase in spending in our budget.
I don't think I have the presentation on the spending.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Thank you, Gabriel.
Okay. Right down the elevator the other way. All right. Next, Laura, don't be bullied.
Thank you. Mr. Juby, would you like to step up too? So I have submitted an amendment. Last year there was $10,000 set aside for a Stop a Bullying campaign. It looked like the money was earmarked, but it was not spent, so it was not put into this year's budget. However, this is a very important cause, and we do need to continue to encourage and protect our young people. Suicide is just an awful thing. It's an awful decision that a young person who's been bullied is making. I've invited Dr. Juby here. He's involved with Don't Be a Monster, which is a national campaign coordinated by the haunting entertainment industry. I was conceived by a man whose son was autistic, and he was afraid that his son would be the object of school bullying. Over 20 haunts nationally, including the Headless Horseman he rides in haunted houses in Ulster Park, are providing free education through interactive school assemblies. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Thank you, Laura. There's a video playing. We have an icon character. His name is Frank Shaley, and he attends all the seminars and assemblies at the schools that we provide for free. He doesn't come out until the end. The children love him. They relate to him. And we are to the point, matter of fact, when we go into these schools. October is anti-bullying month. And so when we go into the schools, it's very fitting that we are the cool guys. We own a haunted house. We are not educators. We are not there every day telling these children what to do and what not to do. Every one of us has attended assemblies in school. And most of the time because we had to, not because we wanted to. These children want to attend our assemblies. When we are making our presentation in New York for Ulster County and the surrounding counties, I have my magician goes in and he does illusions. We also hand out wristbands. Every child that attends the meeting gets a wristband that they wear. You want to just pass these around, please?
Sure.
And that continues with them for months after the presentation. Did you hand this out?
I didn't hand that one. I handed it the other one.
I handed that. There's some numbers. Just in the last 2 years, Headless Horseman Hayrides and Haunted Houses has reached close to 8,000 children. My wife and I have probably $60,000 to $70,000 invested in this program out of our own pocket. It's going to have to stop. I can't continue to do it. It is a worthwhile program. Headless Horseman, unlike the national organization, offers three programs, three different assemblies. This is important because we want middle schools to have the opportunity to have us back every year so that each year of middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, the students are reminded about the importance of not bullying. Our first year program helps schools talk and segue into the New York State's Dignity Act, which is a law that all schools must cover. This sets us apart from the national program, and because of the feedback from our local schools, we have this assembly to not only help students, but school staff as well. It gets them to talk to the kids if they use it in their program. I have some quotes. I think the videos and Frank will be the most memorable. Our kids are 100% silent and engaged for this video and had tons of fun with Frank.
that came from Denver, Colorado. Each year, the presentation is done extremely well. This is from Highland. And the students leave excited and are really looking at how they could make a positive impact on those around them. The students are engaged, attentive, and focused on the material and the presenter, Ryan. You did a great job keeping the presentation moving. Looking forward to next year's presentation. Catskill, New York. Students liked the presentation and were engaged. Many teachers have shared that they worked some of the presentation and highlights into lessons in the days that followed. Catskill Middle School. The students loved Frank, and the message was loud and clear. Wappingers Falls. The students commented that they felt sorry for Frank and didn't see any problem with him. If you notice what he looks like, okay? This is a costume that cost several thousand dollars just to have him come out from backstage at the end of the presentation. Parents were very happy with the presentation. I heard from a few that said there was an impact on their students. New Paltz High School. The principal of the New Paltz Middle School told me he'd been there for 25 years. He told me there's garbage that comes across his desk. He thought this program was brilliant. He asked who came up with it, and actually I told him I did, but I didn't. But I took credit. At first I didn't like the guy, but then I did like him. The students enjoyed it. I know they especially liked the bracelets. I also think they got to reflect on some bullying situations that occurred in their life and to make some sense of them. I have some students who have been victims of bullying, and it's very important for them to see that what happened was wrong and that it was not an actual reflection of something that is wrong with them. Rather, it's the bully, Rondout Junior High School. Kids are saying, don't be a monster in the hallways. If they see some poor behavior, again, that's from Dan Wappinger. Using the number of strategies and presentations throughout the school year to reinforce the message of a positive school community, the Don't Be a Monster program is an important part of our school message. Wapto, New York. I got them on and on.
Yes, if there's any questions.
Yeah, are there any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you. First off, I want to thank you for coming before us, and I'm glad we can maybe have this dialogue. My question is that I thought we actually had funded you, again, in previous year, and it appears as if, I guess, that didn't come through, and you've now been basically paying out of pocket to the tune of $70,000. I can see that you're already doing the work, and we're not paying you for it. I mean, it's part of my question really just becomes, at what point did you realize that it wasn't coming through?
The
funding from us, the funding from the county.
I never heard back from anyone.
Okay.
Last year we went through this, and we were told by the county exec people that there was funding available for that, that you were making funds available, that you were contributing. That did not transpire?
I know that there were funds available in the departmental budget last year, I believe. And I know there was a disagreement over the fact that we funded it last year, so
I don't think it was a disagreement. I think we were surprised that you were funded without us knowing about it. Okay.
So this year, the funds are in contingency.
All right. So there are funds available.
Yeah.
To the tune of how much?
I think $10,000 is what I'm sure here.
I'm just going to
reflect on what actually happened last year, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but what happened last year is Legislator Bill Filio brought forward a resolution for this organization. We heard from the executive's office that they were already working with this organization. So the legislature, after much debate, put $10,000 toward a non-definitive anti-bullying campaign. Not necessarily even a campaign. We went into programs, did a lot of research on best practices. We talked about Legislator Berkey brought in information and brought in an organization from another state. So the legislature did not fund this organization. We were told by the executive that they were already working with this organization. That $10,000
that the legislature didn't spend was not earmarked for any one organization.
Well, let me just correct from what I recall, is that we, as a legislative body, did not set a full 10,000. You said you were doing in the neighborhood about 4,500, if I'm not mistaken.
They were already doing it.
Right.
We said.
But that money was not expended?
No. I'd have to check that, but I know the funds were available.
I think we did get the funds from the executive office.
I'm very confident.
Yes.
The last two, maybe 3 years, you've gotten $10,000 to support this program from the Department of Health and Mental Health.
I don't believe so.
I recall that last year there was disagreement, and if I recall, Legislator Schwartzberg, it was 2 years ago now, had brought in an organization, and it was the will of the Ways and Means Committee to recommend an additional $10,000 for the legislative budget to support some additional anti-bullying programming. The legislature never acted on that spend, those dollars.
Right. Which was on the heels of the anti-bullying, the cyberbullying law. So we were going to look into, we were not talking about a specific organization, but if I'm understanding you, sir, you did get money from the executive, you did work with
As far as I know, we've got it one time, and I don't believe it was 10,000. I don't think it was.
I
think it was 4,500.
Carrying from earlier. There was significant dollars. I think it was 10, but I think that, and I think, Tracy, I think we're talking 2 years ago, so we didn't have the discussion. This discussion was 2 years ago, not last year.
Joe.
Yeah. I could see why some principals were happy. You know, if you take a marketing class or in the advertising world, when you focus group, it's a big deal. After, you know, you'll have a group of people watch 30 commercials, and then you ask them to grade them while they're watching. What was your favorite? And then 30 minutes later, you ask them to describe what the product was in their favorite commercials, and they can't sometimes. So reeling these kids in, keeping them focused, if you're going to do an anti-bullying thing, I think that you're on to something that works and you're not asking for much money. I do have to make the point that you have a private business, and if you're doing it on your own, then I'm all for that. But once you start getting taxpayer dollars, I think anything that has to do with your private business would have to come off of it if we're using taxpayer dollars in part. I think that'd be a fair thing. So we'd have to talk to you about separating the two at that point. Otherwise,
my business is what sells it.
Yeah, but I can't vote yes on taxpayer funds that are going to, in part, every single kid and every single school is going to get something with your business on it. I know that's not why you're doing it. I know it's separate, but that's something that's, I mean, that's
we appreciate where you're coming from, Joe. First, let's see if we're going to fund it.
Yeah.
Then we'll find out later how we're going to fund it and what
the
program is.
But a yes or no for me, just on the record, is going to be completely predicated upon that conversation.
Well, can I say something?
Yes, you may.
I mean, what's the sale if it's not Headless Horseman Hayride? Is it going to be, here comes the county legislature?
Hold on, let me cut everybody short on that, okay? We have not funded the amount of money yet, so we're not even to that point yet. So let's not even go to that point and see if we're going to fund it. Kathy?
There's an email address here that implies a website, don'tbeamonster.org. Do you have a nonprofit that is organized that runs this program?
Yes.
So that would presumably be the organization that could receive funds.
They would be receiving the money, yes, not Headless Horse.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, Laura, next. We're going to move this along. We're way behind schedule. Okay. Medical supplies.
Medical supplies. We'll be quick on this because I do not have a speaker. Over the years, and we do, just be open, we do this at the town of New Paltz. We take in medical supplies that are stored. We put them in an 8x12 shed. It's only open for 4 hours once a week. So if somebody needs a wheelchair and we can't keep those in stock or crutches or whatever, they're available. RCAL, which is a resource center for accessible living, has a building that's approximately 50 by 80 feet, so it's about 4,000 square feet. For 30,000, they could open that up. It would involve actually not just access to free or low-cost medical equipment, but it would also become one of their learning programs, where they have young people come in who would be, assisting folks who came in who needed a medical supply. They'll be able to use computers, so there's a degree of education for the young people that way as well. It is $30,000, which seems like a an important contribution, but an important part of what is lacking right now. I did take a quick look regionally on what's available as far as access to free medical equipment. Arcal is the only one in Ulster County. There's one or two in Dutchess, and there's several in Suffolk, but I didn't see anything else listed. And this equipment is very expensive. With the current health industry the way it is, you have to jump through hoops. It's a much needed resource. So, questions on that? Yes.
Joe?
Is this going to deal with, you mentioned the facility, is this going to deal with storage? Because I talked to you last night about this, and this is something, calling Catholic Charities, or trying to remember ARCAL, Office of the Aging, something I hear from all these different people I talk to is they don't have storage capabilities. A lot of these devices are tens of thousands of dollars. Some of them are not being paid or at all by insurance. Some are paying. Some of the insurance will pay half or 80%. Some of these people are using the equipment and getting healthy. Some of them aren't, but the equipment's only being used for a year or two.
Right.
If we had a program and a place to store it, what I'm getting from a lot of these different entities is we need a central place to store all this equipment. So when otherwise they're literally trying to find somebody comes with a bed lift, they're trying to find somebody who needs a bed lift, or they have to pass up on it, and this could end up down the road being a savings to the county of certainly getting equipment to people that are doing without. It's dealing with storage, or
it is, and in fact that is our problem with our new pulses. We have an 8x12 foot building that's really not manned. And that is it, right on Ulster Avenue in Kingston, is that 80x50 foot building. So it's there. It's just that it's not open and ready for people to come in. So then that's where
much of the funds would go
to get this building open. It's about 4,000 square feet, which is substantial.
And they're going to be able to get, and that's part of this plan is specifically for storage.
Yes.
Because when talking to people, that's what I feel like is not here.
There's no place for them to go, no place to pick up. Yeah.
Any other questions? No, next one. Ulster County SPC. Who does?
The 30,000, is that for 1 year storage or?
They own the building,
okay.
So it's a permanent upgrade, and we'll open up that program. So to start up the program, get the
so
building.
So it's a one-shot $30,000, not a year or 10?
Exactly, yeah. This is a one-time startup for them. I would like to continue to keep this group involved. They do quite a bit. Did you get the attachments on? Because they did provide their organizational overview. ARCAL is not what I thought it was before I did a tour of their facilities. You know, I thought it was just resources and access for people who are challenged. It does quite a bit more. They've got special education. They help people get through this case management, so they help them get through our system. There is nursing home transition and diversion. So it's a really, there's about 14 or 15 programs that are absolutely amazing, but this one was kind of near and dear for me because it's I see the need, as did Legislative Joe Maloney, is the equipment is out there, and it's access to it and a place to store it, and there's the need is there too.
Any other questions? All right, next, Ulster County SPCA.
I will invite Regina up. I can never say your last name, Carbonari. Yeah, Carbonari, who is the executive director of the Ulster County SPCA. I have put in a proposal to put in another, I'm sorry, I thought it was 10, it's 8,500 into the feral spay neuter from the contingency budget. As you know, throughout the beginning of the year until I think June, there is a feral cat issue in Ulster County, and Gina told me that the funding right now that she does receive only gets her through about half of the year. So it's very important until we get laws in place to keep supporting the good work that the Ulster County SPCA is doing. With that, I'll turn the mic over to her so she can give you some more information.
Thank you.
Sure, and I'll be very brief. So we've been doing this for about 4 years now, trying to help control the feral cat population, and the reality is that every single one of those years, we've only been able to spread that $50,000 through till about September or October timeframe. So as of right now, we have no more funding left. It has been all exhausted, and all of those appointments were actually being made by the beginning of September to finish us through October. This is really kind of the critical part of the year where we really do need to have that funding stretch, because if we don't get those animals spayed and neutered now, we will have all those kittens that come up in kitten season, which is the beginning of spring. So in order to kind of keep those spay neuters going throughout the entire year and to really help prevent kitten season from happening, we really do need more funding. And I want to be clear, too, that there is no profit in this for the Ulster County SPCA. This barely covers our costs and in some cases does not cover our costs. In addition to what's being provided with the feral grant itself, is we also do provide the opportunity for all of the organizations that bring these cats to us to be able to not only get rabies and a surgery, but they also pay the $10 themselves to be able to ensure that we're covering fleas, mites, worms that we're giving distemper. So this way, those cats that are being returned back to a colony are doing so fully vaccinated and healthy, so we don't have disease issues as well. So by ensuring that we can get this money stretching more for the surgeries themselves, it allows those nonprofit organizations, those other cat workers out there, to be able to still spend that extra $10 and be able to ensure that those cats are going back there fully vaccinated and healthy. Yes.
Hector?
Thank you. So, you know, you just mentioned that the even at 8,500, you'd still be operating sort of at a loss. So I guess really,
yes.
I have to ask that question of, how much then, is that? How much is the cost? Or how much is, for you running your full program, even like right now, how much is that costing?
Each cat that we spay or neuter, we are reimbursed through the grant for $36. Now, that's just for the surgery. There's also in there, there is amounts in there for if we have...
But isn't that also sort of, I apologize for interrupting, mm-hmm. but isn't that almost like, that's like the midpoint though, because some of them are spays and some of them are neuters.
Correct.
And then you basically just get a certain dollar amount, period.
Correct.
And the problem then becomes if you're doing more spays than neuters,
correct.
You're basically operating at a deficit, right?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Correct. And that's it. I'm sorry.
And what's the deficit?
It's $42 at cost for a spay.
Sorry.
Tracy?
I got caught up.
Thank you. So I have just a couple questions. One is how, I can kind of do the math, but how many spays or neuters do you do a year? I mean, you said it September, October, you're out of money, essentially. But
right.
About
so
how many do you do a year and how many could you do a year?
The grant itself covers roughly about 450 at the $15,000 mark right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I say roughly 450 because, again, there are parameters in the contract that allow us to, if a cat has something excessive that happens during a spay surgery, and now we have additional surgery that has to happen, there's $25 that's allowed to cover those additional medical costs on that cat. So if we have a cat like that and the organization who brought the cat to us doesn't have the funding to cover more than that, then we will apply $25 towards it. We try not to, and most of the cat organizations will pay for that upfront because they also recognize that everybody's trying to use this grant. So everybody shares the wealth a little bit, and they'll take the hit on their own organization to make that payment instead of applying it to the grant.
And then my second question is this strictly, or does your organization strictly do the spays and neuters on feral cats? Because, and the reason I'm asking the question is, I imagine, and I've certainly seen it in my own world, where someone, there is a kitten season comes,
right.
You know, people are standing outside of the supermarket handing out kittens, someone takes a kitten home that now is an indoor-outdoor cat, but that family doesn't have the money to go to a traditional vet to get the cat spayed or neutered. So do you only do feral cats, or do you do other cats for people that might be in financial need?
We do. We have our low-cost clinic. So we charge $90 for a cat for a spay or neuter if it's a pet cat.
Mm-hmm.
It's our reduced fee on ferals normally is $50. That includes all of those vaccinations that I talked about, the extra $10. And then if it's a feral cat that's being brought to us with one of the organizations and we have the grant funds available, then we apply the grant for that organization. Even if somebody comes and says, hey, I just found a feral cat outside and I'm bringing it in to get a spay or neuter done, as long as we have grant funds, we apply that to the grant. So it's for anybody who brings us a feral cat, we will use the grant to pay for that feral cat having the spay or neuter done. But we do operate our clinic as a low-cost clinic. So if somebody has a pet cat or dog, they can bring either one to us. And it's much reduced compared to what they would pay at a normal veterinary.
$250 and $400, isn't
right.
it now?
Yeah.
And do you turn anyone away right now because of lack of funds?
I
mean, both either through the grant or when you run out of funds on the grant, you just say to people, we can't take the pets.
We can't do it for no cost. That's when they are charged a $50 fee, because that includes the spay surgery, as well as it includes that additional $10 for the additional vaccination, the dewormer, the flea, and mites.
But I guess what I'm trying to get at is if you had more resources, could you significantly increase the number of cats that you
Yes. We were originally talking about 10,000. That's at least 275 cats at $10,000.
And you think you could get 275 cats?
Absolutely.
Into the spay and neuter?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not for lack of wanting in terms of the potential patients.
Correct, because even when we run out of the funds in October, we still have a lot of folks who will come in and they will pay the $50 because we have to at least have our costs covered. Mm-hmm. We can't, as a nonprofit organization, we can't afford to just do the service for free for everybody. But we certainly do have a much reduced rate for them to be able to come in and do that. And we still have our appointments filled. So it's not for a lack of there being enough cats out there to have the spay neuter done. It's just a lack of we don't have enough money in the grant to make it a really no cost to anybody who's bringing in a feral.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
No other questions? Thank you
just
very much.
Do you still, when someone brings a cat in, do you still charge the feline AIDS and leukemia? I remember I dropped a cat off many, many years ago, and it was an administrative fee to see if the cat had feline AIDS or leukemia.
We will do testing if that's requested. So we don't across the board test everybody.
I couldn't leave the cat until I put $25 on the counter.
Oh, we don't have that policy anymore now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was back when we were not accepting those cats. We would recommend euthanasia for those cats. However, things have changed, and there's been a lot more studies, and those cats can live very happy, healthy lives.
I've seen your facility. Hat my hat. So if I was a cat, that's where I'd want to be.
Yes, yes. So we do. We accept those cats.
It's quite yes.
I love that. Okay.
Everybody should go look at it.
What is the
please? Yes, by all means, come to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm swimming
thank
out there every
thank
day.
You.
Thank you.
Top it.
All right, Legislator Bartel, GL nutrition study.
It's offensive if you did a little bit with the cat.
Thanks. So I want to first thank Amber for her help, because I've been kind of out of commission due to a family emergency for the last week. So Amber put this together for me, which
thank
I'm
you.
Grateful for. So the first of my amendments is to conduct a jail nutritional evaluation. Something I've talked about over the years repeatedly. The question, I know we've done some minor analyses about taking it in-house or keeping it out-of-house, and I think what I'm looking to get to the bottom of is not simply about the finances of in or out of house, but also to do actually a nutritional evaluation. Just 2 weeks ago, I was at the jail visiting someone, a constituent, not one of my constituents from my district, but one of all of our constituents, Ulster County, sort of reached out, and among other things, we talked about the food. And I think we need to have concern. You know, a large portion of our jail population is waiting trial. They're unsentenced. And while I know we're trying to save every dollar we can, the very meager amount of money that we spent, I know in the Freeman I was quoted as saying, whatever the number was, $1.20 for three meals, that's crazy, leading a reader to believe I was saying it's a crazy amount of money on the high side. What I was actually saying was it's a crazy amount of money on the low side to accept decent nutrition. And on my conversations with anyone who has served time in our jail, despite what I've heard and what I've seen on paper it says that, not to get into the details, but I'm going to touch on them in a moment, on paper it says there's a choice of
fruit or fruit juice, and we've heard, anyone who's heard me ask the questions, we've heard the response that our inmates are given fruit, and I have repeatedly heard from people who have served time for extended periods that they have never seen fresh fruit in their stays. So I'd like to just to have us commit to a study that looks into all these issues, including potentially bringing it in-house. I think now is the right time to do it, and Vicky put together a background with CGR, so this is, you know, you can look at it if you have any questions, and I'm open to changes. It's a draft, so this is the proposal on its face.
Any questions?
I'm trying to think back to the contract. Do it say fresh fruit or just fruit?
The menu says fresh fruit or. There's always an or, and the or is either fruit product, not Jell-O, or fruit juice. You know, it's an or, yeah. So, again, and I'm talking to some of the people that I've spoken to. In one case, it's a very close friend, and I trust what I heard. So I'd like to eventually take a tour and see now that it's in working. But I think that this is something that we owe ourselves to
sure.
do. Yeah, I think we owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to our inmates to do the same. So. That's the first one. I have another amendment. Has it been circulated?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so the second amendment, I'm going to need my glasses, unfortunately. My second amendment has to do with the county comptroller's office. Mm-hmm. And I want this to be the opening of a discussion about this office. When I heard that and when I saw in the executive budget that there was an administrative assistant put back into the office, it got me thinking, first and foremost, about the want and the need and sort of the disconnect that's been happening lately, particularly between the legislature and the comptroller's office. So what I'm proposing on the page in front of you is that administrative assistant position be shifted. It's a management position so that it can be specifically designated as a CPA. And what you don't see on the page and what I'm asking that we begin to do is that the legislature, as per the charter, actually directs a series of audits and performance studies from the comptroller's office that together we work to change the conversation and to request and direct studies that we need. You know, we had $100,000 in the legislature's budget to go for outside audits. We have a division of ACE, which on our own website talks about program performance evaluations. We have reached to our own staff, certainly Amber, and asked her for performance evaluations and program evaluations by running through the budget as it exists and any information she can find to provide that to us in our own analysis. And I think, you know, I was here for the, as other members were, I was here for the creation of the charter and for that debate and discussion about the creation of an Office of a Comptroller. And I think the charter got it right. And while I think that at the moment we are suffering this disconnect, We have to take ownership, and we have to take action. And what I'm proposing is that we do that by giving the comptroller another auditor in order to effectuate the change we're going to ask for. So I'm open to discussion. Again, it's written in this resolution as a management position, just so you understand, because if it's not a management position, we cannot require that it be a CPA. And I think that's critical. But everything's on the table. I think we need to begin this discussion.
Any questions? God bless you. Hector?
Thank you. And I don't want us to run up against the other, sorry. I don't want us to run up against the other presentation that we made. But, you know, Tracy, this is brave and bold, and I expect nothing less from you. And I appreciate you bringing it up for discussion.
You know, I think one of the questions I basically have, though, is, you know, again, you know, we want it to be a CPA or someone of that level. I don't really know how we can require that outside of, I guess, to a certain degree. I mean, can we actually do that with a deputy director of audit when we already have a director of audit or deputy controller, rather, for audit?
I think it might be the only way we could. I think this is going to involve a sit down with the comptroller, no question.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't imagine this happening in a vacuum. And had I not run up against personal issues that put a time constraint, that conversation would have already begun. And I don't want that conversation to happen in a vacuum. I think that we, the legislature, need to have the comptroller in, and we need to have a very frank conversation about what we're asking for, and I certainly can have a very clear conversation about why I'm asking for this. But the follow-on is this: you know, we outside audits and outside program evaluations might still be required in special instances. There are specialty studies that that we might always have to go outside to look for. But we should be able to turn to our office of the comptroller and ask for a series of specific studies and a series of specific evaluations across the county. I'm not simply speaking about within the department of the executive. You know, we have other duly elected offices, the sheriff's office, the DA's office, the county clerk's office. And as legislators, we need those tools to be able to do our job. We really do. We need to have those evaluations. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, these evaluations, these audits, as I've seen them happen, both primarily from the outside in terms of our outside auditors, you know, it's a process. But I know for myself, I'm most interested in the program audits. The number crunching is, you know, something that happens on an annual basis with our external audit, but the program audits are what we really, I think, need to spend some time and energy on to understand what we're doing, how it compares to other counties, etc. So
I think getting to Hector's question and regarding if you want to have the controller's office have an employee who has certification of a CPA, I think we have that ability to put that as part of
into the job description.
So I think that can be done very easily. I think you're very correct in, you know, sitting down with the controller and have an open discussion regarding all that, but that I'm sure we have the ability to, you know, designate what we actually would like there. And if it's a CPA we require, it's going to be a CPA. So
yeah, if it were competitive, then we wouldn't be able to say that. Well, the charter says that such other related duties required by the county executive or county legislature. I mean, I don't know that I would use the language in the description in terms of at the directive of the legislative body. It's probably a little more extreme than I would use, but this is a starting point for discussion. The directive of the legislative body is going to be the directive of what studies we want to see accomplished within the coming year. And I think that can set us off on a better foot together, because if the legislature is requesting study A, B, C, D, E, F, and the comptroller is coming back to us, when I say the comptroller, I mean the office or who's ever performing the audit or performance audit, they're coming back to us, there's a dialogue that's begun from the beginning. So often these studies come out, and they come out in a flurry of he said, at the last minute, and the legislature, you know, I would not be surprised if some members of the legislature didn't even read the reports, given the controversy that's happened related to this office. But I have to say, again, to me, it's the beginning of a discussion, but it's also a look back to the intent of the charter. I don't hold the charter is a living document. I don't hold it in this esteem of, oh, the charter says, so we must follow. But I also, to be perfectly honest, I've heard those conversations both from within the legislature and within the executive branch floating the idea of the possibility of getting rid of the comptroller, of why not bring it under the legislature. And I think that would be a really big mistake. And the way to shift that is to begin to shift the relationship to put
to have the conversation about what we, the legislature, want to see, what we need from the comptroller, to be very clear from the outset, these are the studies we need to have accomplished. And I think another CPA would help that to happen, and I think us being very clear from the outset would also help that to happen.
All right, any other questions? Kathy?
I appreciate the creativity of this and think that it's really important that this conversation get open. I think that that office does need an administrative assistant, so I would prefer to see an amendment that dealt with the issue of a CPA and the audits separate from that and make sure that the office has an administrative assistant.
Thank you. I had both prepared, but I felt like since no one had seen it before, I did not want to overwhelm everyone with multiple choice, but I had both prepared because I thought the same.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Next, Legislator Hector.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief because I know it's been a long 2 days. This amendment before you was originally drafted by Chairman Rock. After discussion with the chairman, I signed on in support. The chairman couldn't be here today to present this, so I was happy to lend a bipartisan hand to speak with you all. If you look at the amendment before you, we are essentially amending the salaries for 3 positions in the legislature for a total of just over $18,000 for 3 positions. Those increases reflect the position of senior legislative employee, which has been performing tasks using her qualifications as a paralegal in that position. In that position now, they handle all of our contracts from the legislature, in addition to reviewing and analyzing all the contracts that come through the legislature. The additional increase goes with legislative financial analyst. That position brings, that salary increase brings that position in parity and at the same level as other fiscal analysts in county government. You will also note that that position also takes on the title of deputy clerk now, which is being moved from the current position of confidential secretary. In addition to that, there's a $5,793 increase for the clerk of the legislature to reflect additional duties over past terms. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Herbie?
It seems like we're amending their salaries commensurate with additional duties that they'll be doing or have been performing.
Mm-hmm.
Will those duties become part and parcel of their job description so that in the future, whoever occupies those positions will have those same qualifications and not come in at a different performance level but acquire the same salary?
Yeah, I'm confident that that will happen. I think that's a conversation that we need to especially have with the clerk of the legislature and the chairman as we move forward. Currently, that is what is available to all members of the legislature is not only job descriptions, but also job evaluations ongoing for each employee of the legislative staff.
Okay. I mean, as long as the job descriptions are also
available. And I would also note that, you know, as senior legislative employee in that position utilizing a paralegal degree, that salary is equivalent to other paralegals. Positions in county government.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
How much did we just look inside the county to similar pay? Did we look to other counties? How did we come up with these numbers? I am in agreement.
Yeah.
I believe.
My understanding and my discussions with Chairman Ronk is that all the research that led to these specific numbers was done internally within county government.
Okay, and I agree, Legislator Litz, I had the same thought, that if we're going forward, that senior legislative employee, for example, it should become a requirement.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Going into the future for that position for whoever's to come next.
I agree, especially because the essence of where that paralegal experience is being used is within our own contracts and contracts coming in, like I mentioned, which obviously, as we all know through the committee process and during each month, is a very important responsibility.
Any other? Kathy?
At the level of my town, when we have someone who has a specific skill set, like the paralegal, we have a separate budget line for those activities. And that way, if that position is next filled with somebody who is not a paralegal, we're not paying at the level of the paralegal salary. I don't know if there's a mechanism to do that at the county level, but it basically would be splitting off and saying contract analysis and paying for that maybe even as a consultant, instead of changing a salary line, which then, if the next person who fulfills that role doesn't have a paralegal training, we'd be paying for it but not getting the services.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's not something I have information on, but I'll definitely.
It might be worth looking into whether we can do that. I know the town's doing it.
Tracy?
Say on Kathy's point, I mean, I think it's even an interesting suggestion, even if not paying separately, but tracking, that's really worth tracking that work, so that if later down the road we were hiring someone without a skill, we knew what portion of the job was dedicated to that particular skill. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just from an internal...
My intention is 100% to, it's not about the people in those jobs, it's about their skill set. And I really feel strongly that we need a paralegal in our office and that we need a CPA. So these are just to make it equal with the others. Otherwise, they can transfer over to a different area and make more money. Why wouldn't they? So it's just trying to build equality, and I feel that those two skill sets are essential for us. For what we've done this year, I think we have to have a moving forward, whether it's these people who I love and hope stay with us, but if it's not them, I think we need the same skill set.
Yeah. Well, we're going to build a department where we have quality people that are going to be with us for years. I mean, we have to start paying them. We had in the past people that were very good quality people. They got other offers within the county. You can't blame them for leaving. They did leave us, which left us in a hole. So I think we all realize that, you know, we're going to be, you know, an independent body, and we need professional people to help us, then we should pay them and move forward. Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Hepner. Yes, Joe Maloney brought a late resolution in. Basically, it's about the district attorney who was talking yesterday. Joe, you want to say it quickly? We've got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I could probably even do it from here.
Okay.
It's very similar. The only thing I changed, and I'll be interested to hear what the executive's team thinks, in the Benjamin Center's recommendations, I felt like one of the things there was a lot of agreement on was that we're probably a little low on bed tax, that Mr. Goldman seemed pretty comfortable saying that it was going to be probably a little higher than what it was. So rather than just take from contingency, for Mr. Carnwright's assistant DAs, which on the same topic we were just talking about, I think there might be a department here that's been overlooked for years. And this is a conversation we can have in before the vote in Ways and Means. But that $68,000, I think they're pretty underpaid. I'm going to 80. There's room for negotiation. And I'm taking, instead of from contingency, I'm just adding 24, which is less than a third of where the Benjamin Center and Mr. Goldnick were in more or less agreement that there was room to play. So I'm not taking from contingency. I'm just adding a little bit, $24,000, to the expected bed tax money. And there's two or three different reasons that it looks like we're going to be a little low on that. So it's simple. It's just a little variation on what the DA proposed. And we're going from 68 to 80 on those two positions. And instead of just taking from contingency, we're just going to add to the bed tax that we were pretty comfortable thinking was low, and we're still not even going to be going anywhere near adding 75. That's all I'm interested to hear if anybody has any.
Any questions?
Yes,
Kathy.
I just would object to the characterization that all of us thought that the bed tax projection was low. I don't think we had any poll on that, and I personally don't agree.
I think he's referring to that when they had the discussion with the Benjamin Group, and Bert mentioned that there could have been room to expand that. I think that's what
my understanding of that conversation is that there was reason to accept different opinions about what that might be, but there was not a sense in my mind that we would move away from a conservative estimate on bed tax, which leaves us in a solid financial position of, for the past 7 years, having no increases in taxes, to instead take a more, what do you call it, when you have a stock that is more volatile kind of stock, to take a more volatile approach to our estimation here, speculative, you know, to treat it as though it's a speculative stock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that with the county's resources. I prefer very much to underestimate, if need be, our income and overestimate our finances and have a reserve that leaves us with resilience in a time in our, you know, our in the world that we definitely need that resilience. So I'm just saying that I don't agree that we should expand our projection of the bed tax or any of the projections that were indicated from the bed from before.
All right, well, Joe, I'm going to not recognize you for the simple fact that we're running out of time. But the point that we have, we're going to have a meeting prior to the December 5th meeting, where we're going to be discussing all these factors regarding what you feel, what somebody else has feel. We're going to come up with a conclusion and the ways and means. That's going to be a very detailed meeting. I don't know when it's going to be set yet, but the probably bring your sleeping bag, so maybe we'll be sleeping overnight that night. But
can you bring some more pasta?
No, I'm done with pasta. Sorry, but Tracy, quickly.
When you say you don't know when it's going to be set yet, what can we talk about when it's going to be set? Since
it'll be either Thursday or Monday.
Can we ask? Can I ask, put in my
Thursday this week?
Monday? Thursday
yes.
This week is very.
And then it's going to be Monday.
I feel like
Monday.
Thursday's really.
Monday.
Monday.
I need more time.
Monday at 4:00.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We have to commence this meeting. Thank you. Any new business, old business?
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor, say aye. We have a meeting in the small library regarding Eisner-Amper forensic investigation.
307.
Thank you.